Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's December 23rd. Currently 41 degrees in Park City and Heber City, both under mostly cloudy skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Merry Christmas Eve, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout your Tuesday. Look for mostly cloudy skies. Once again, breezy conditions and very warm conditions as well. Temperatures climbing once again back into the low 50s for us in the Park City area. We're going to see those high temperatures climbing into the upper 50s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into your Christmas Eve, we'll start out with mainly just some cloudy skies during the first half of your Wednesday. Temperatures starting off above freezing in the mid to upper 30s. We'll see those highs climbing to near 50 in Park City with highs in the mid 50s in the Heber Valley. Overall, we're looking at rain chances ramping up. Yes, rain, not snow, as we go into your Christmas Eve afternoon and the Christmas Eve night. So as Santa makes his way through the area across the Wasatch Back, he's going to run into some wet conditions, not snowy conditions. As we go throughout your Christmas Day, look for more chances of off and on periods of scattered showers across the area. It won't be a complete washout during the day, but we will have off and on rain and even some wind out there as well. Temperatures only dipping down to near 40 for us on Christmas Day morning, and high temperatures in the upper 40s to near 50 in Park City, and low to mid 50s for us for highs in the Heber Valley. What a toasty Christmas Day. Now, as we get beyond Christmas, we start to track some changes. An upper level low will start to move our way on Friday. That will bring us another round of precipitation, but not only that, it will finally bring us some colder air back into the area. So we're looking at falling snow levels as we go throughout your day on Friday. Those snow levels will start off around 6,500 feet and potentially drop below 4,000 feet by the time we get towards your Friday night. So yes, look for any rain shower activity on Friday to change over to snow shower activity during the day on Friday into Friday night. And we could have a decent period of at least the chance of accumulating snow Friday night heading into your Saturday morning. So that is going to be something to keep a close eye on there. Could have some accumulating snow by the time we get towards your Saturday morning as we get much colder. Highs only in the 30s for us as we get towards the weekend with sunshine returning by Sunday. Let's look at your latest forecasts for the ABC 4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us now from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning, Nikki. Forecast is looking better.
Forecast is looking better. It's been pretty quiet in the backcountry in most cases. There was one avalanche remotely triggered off of the Park City Ridgeline near Murdoch Peak on a northeast aspect. We've got a few UAC staff members heading out with the Park City Patrol today to go check that out. The main issue just continues to be that persistent weak layer. So we've got that weak snow on the ground from October and November. And then we've got another weak layer about 2 to 6 inches down. Doesn't really matter if you find the weak layer at the ground or mid snowpack. Either way, we've still got that same issue, strong snow over weeks now, so we want to pay attention to that, especially on aspects facing north, west, and east at those upper elevations that have gotten some more wind. And then, like you just heard, it's really warm out. Today, we want to keep wet snow at the forefront of our thoughts. So as temperatures rise, if we get any sun, we might get some rain. We just want to be aware of wet snow avalanches. This is especially important on like steep southerly terrain or near rock bands. So look for roller balls, pinwheels, or just kind of how the snow is becoming wet under your feet throughout the day. And if it is starting to get wet, maybe move to a different aspect. So a little bit better forecast, but overall we've got a moderate avalanche danger on all of those aspects that have the persistent weak layer. So those upper elevations, west, north, and east facing slopes.
Okay, Nikki, thanks so much. KPCW News Time now, 8:10.
The daily Utah Avalanche Center report is made possible in part by Earl Peak Painting, changing colors in Park City for over 30 years.
The end of the year is always filled with countdowns. The best books, best movies, shows, and songs. Think about the authors you heard this year on KPCW's public affairs shows. The movies you saw thanks to the Friday film reviews. And all the great music you discovered along the way. Not to mention the news and interviews that kept you in the know every day this year. The end of 2025 is almost here. Take a moment now to support the KPCW programming you love as we head into 2026.
It's 8:10. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with Deputy County Manager Jana Young with a look back at some of the big issues of the year, as well as a preview of next year's state legislative session. David Yore talks about the sale of his family ranch and his new life in Missouri. And from the Park City Summit County Arts Council, we've got Kendall Kelly and Andrea Zavala with a rundown of some of the art and cultural events happening soon. Then stay tuned for This Green Earth. Today's guests include National Geographic explorer Greg O'Croy Crow, who talks about beluga whales, elusive narwhals, and a study regarding a unique species of seals. Then author John Waterman talks about his book, Into the Thaw, Witnessing Wonder Amid the Arctic Climate Crisis. He's been on scores of exhibitions to the north to document the environmental and cultural changes caused by our warming planet. All of that happening on This Green Earth, of course, every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10. Good morning. Well, with the coming year's budget already passed, the Summit County Council taking a holiday break, and we'll meet next January 7, 2026. In the studio with a look back at the work done this year and what's ahead next year, I have Deputy County Manager Jana Young. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so the big issues, of course, for many, the approval of the Dakota Pacific development, fraught with controversy, process problems, and yet finally approved. And I guess I got the feeling that the council felt approving the plan was the lesser of two evils, as legislative overreach kind of shut down that public referendum process. So now what? What's happening here? I mean, the project just making its way through Planning Commission, which requires Planning Commission approval?
Yes, so there are a number of next steps associated with this public-private partnership with Dakota Pacific, many of which are running concurrently. One that the staff has been working on for several weeks now is the joint venture agreement, which has been under negotiations with Dakota Pacific. This is what operationalizes the partnership. It details how that shared enterprise will run in terms of its governance, finance, legal, beyond just building it. I'm told that there's no significant issues that remain with that, so that should be completed and executed soon. Additionally, staff has been working really hard on the housing and transit reinvestment zone application to the state. We've heard this as HTRZ many times on your program. It is a tax increment financing tool for the project that has been taking a lot of time as well. And in addition to that, we're also working to finalize the architectural design standards, which need to be approved by the county manager before any other applications can be made. Those are currently under review by the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Once all these things are done, then we do expect future project applications from Dakota Pacific, most of which are tied to phasing with the Utah Department of Transportation projects to improve traffic congestion in Kimball Junction. So in terms of what you might see, we don't anticipate any true construction until late 2026 or early 2027 on this project.
Okay. Real quick, back to that tax increment financing tool, the housing and transit reinvestment. Where does that money get drawn from?
It'll be within that development. And, you know, in the full disclosure, I'm not an expert on this, but the purpose of this tool was to encourage housing development around transit hubs so that we could keep money within that zone and create more of a, you know, a walkable, less congested community. And it was a tool that actually Summit County asked to have access to originally when it came before the state legislature. So I think that'll be really useful as we move forward in this development.
Okay. And as you mentioned, very hand in hand with this are the improvements to 224, as we see the development of hundreds of residential units and some commercial development as well. What do we know about UDOT and where this project is? I don't even think it's on the STIP, the State Transportation Improvement Plan.
Actually, I'm happy to report that the Kimball Junction project is on the UDOT STIP, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, and that $48.5 million have been programmed for it. So this was obviously a very crucial step to moving this project forward. And UDOT continues to show its commitment to this because they have issued just last week a request for statement of qualifications, which will allow them to procure a firm to work on the design of this project. That closes January 15th. The design is anticipated to take about 3 years, and then actual construction would be 1 to 2 years. So in total about a 5-year project. So we expect around year 2031 to open this new intersection. In addition to that, one other thing that you will also see in 2027 is UDOT is planning to reconfigure the State Route 224 and Ute Boulevard intersection that'll run simultaneously with the Kimball Junction design. So some great progress there.
Okay, let's see, another issue this year was the county council going to districts. So what does this mean going forward? I mean, when you think about, you know, who runs for county council, we're going to have fewer people in a district, but it may open it up to people who may not have run for office anyway.
Yeah, I think you bring up the most critical part of this is only time will tell as we go through some of these election cycles to see what, if any, operational changes will happen moving to districts. As you mentioned, you know, this happened this last legislative session where we were required to change our form of government. The council adopted a new districting map and were assigned districts in October. And to be honest, I've not seen a lot of changes so far. I mean, we have seen some of our, you know, we've seen a lot more split votes on the council that I'm assuming is related to people thinking more about the region that they're representing, where we used to have a lot of unanimous decisions. But to be honest, these five council members have been accustomed to serving at large. And from what I've seen, they continue to work very collaborative with each other. They tend to respond to all constituent concerns, no matter where that person lives. You're not seeing territorial things. So again, I think we'll have to see as potentially new members are elected to the body that only know representing a district if that might change things. I personally am a little disappointed that there is no longer any at-large representation on the body. I think it's valuable for people to have another person they can go to if they need help, but also having someone who's pure focus is just thinking about the entire community and how decisions of that body might affect that community. So it'll be interesting to see as we transition to this.
So that can't be changed so that we're more like Wasatch County?
No, unfortunately, during the special session, a new bill was adopted that changed this, that now every county within the state, if they have a council manager form of government or a council, must be in districts, cannot have any at-large representation. The only caveat or exemptions to that are Wasatch County and Salt Lake County, who already had districts, but also some at-large representation. So, when this went through the committee process, there were legislators that expressed concern about that. If philosophically we feel that this is the best form of government, why are we giving exemptions to some counties and not others? So that is one disappointment, I think, in my perspective, but it's interesting to me that the legislature moved in that direction.
Yeah, and I think really the basis for all of this was to get a conservative on the county council. There are no guarantees, but that's the hope, is that?
I mean, we understand it to be a partisan issue, although it also was couched as trying to get more rural representation on the council, which I can understand, although we'll argue they always have had rural representation. Tanya Hansen is a great example of that, born and bred, fifth generation from North Summit. But also, I would argue that if we had some at-large representation, it would actually help the rural voice because they wouldn't be outvoted by the populated areas that will have likely three members on the body, and they would have someone else that they could go to if they wanted to pass an initiative because they share a constituency.
Okay. Lots of money was spent with regard to the Your Ranch closure, the conservation easement being finalized last week. So what does that mean kind of going forward? I know that there are some parcels that have been kind of left out or that would be allow some sort of development. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's take a moment and just celebrate the fact that we have closed on this ranch, which is a very exciting thing to happen this month. I want to thank our staff and Summit Land Conservancy and the Year family for helping us get to this point. I'm so glad Dave Year will be on your show later. Yeah, to talk about the conservation easements, it is a complicated situation because there are a lot of parcels involved in this purchase, and different funding sources allowed us to close on those parcels. So depending on those funding sources, it kind of dictates what the conservation easement can and cannot allow. The one conservation easement that has already been recorded at closing is on the North Meadows. That specifically, so the intent of that one and the one on the South Meadows is to keep producers on the land. So this can be done by either selling that property with the conservation easement to a producer or leasing the land. There will be an additional 5 easements that will come to council next year for approval, one of which will be for the recreation area, and that will be the area that will be open to the public eventually for things like hiking, biking, equestrian. And I should note, though, the public, it's important to understand that even though the county owns this property, it's not currently open to the public. We actually, as part of our option agreement and at closing, have a lease to the Yore family so they can continue grazing on the land for one more year as they transition and move away. So we expect that the public access will occur when that recreation area opens, which is late 2027.
Okay. What about a date set for the 910 Ranch? Anything there?
Oh, we're so close. So we've been working closely. As you know, we secured money from a federal grant this year to close on that property. We've been working really closely with both the Forest Service and the state to try to close on this as soon as possible. Our last step that we're currently waiting on is the appraisal from the Forest Service, which should be done any day now. Once it is, we can check that box and close on the property. We're thinking it will likely be first quarter of 2026.
Okay. How is the county chipping away at the 1,500 unit affordable housing goal?
Yes, so the big accomplishment in housing in 2025 was setting the goal. Now in 2026, we'll have to engage in further policy discussions with the council and the housing authority to figure out how to do it. So as you mentioned, the council set this goal of 1,500 affordable units over the next 10 years. So as part of that process, our staff will continue to develop new tools that can assist the council with evaluating potential site locations for those units, whether that's redevelopment or new development. Additionally, another important conversation we have to have with the council is there, a couple of them have expressed an interest in determining what's essential occupations that could be prioritized for this housing, whether that's a teacher, nurse, sheriff deputies, what have you, that might change the area median income requirements for eligibility for those housing units. That might be different from our lower wage occupations and hospitality and retail. So of course you can imagine essential, that definition changes based on who you speak to and what is actually needed in the community. So we'll have to have that challenging conversation, as well as what type of housing the county will need and at what price point. And then also understand in the context of our changing demographics as we become an aging population, how does that impact the housing market? So you will see a lot more probably work sessions and conversations around this and how we can start to chip away at that goal in 2026.
Okay, and the county also joined with the Park City Community Foundation on their food waste initiative, and at the same time, a new landfill cell. So how are things going there?
Really great. We're so thankful to the Park City Community Foundation for approaching us to partner with them. We were very pleased to provide around a $45,000 grant, which they matched so that we could provide free food waste pickup for residents throughout the end of the year. It has been such a successful partnership that we're looking to continue that in 2026. We don't have the details of what that looks like yet. We'll be sitting down and working that out with them in early January. But food waste in particular tends to be, or is starting to be, more and more of a focus for the county because it does take up about 50% of the airspace at our landfill. So it presents the best opportunity for us if we can divert that or not have it go to the landfill, to actually saving years to our landfill life. In addition to that, we have an internal county team that continues to work on an action plan addendum to our 2018 Solid Waste Master Plan that will recommend additional actions actionable strategies to reduce and divert more waste from our landfill with the goal of adding an extra 10 years of life to that. The new cell that was just completed this year will help in that endeavor as well. That was a big accomplishment for our teams, but it is something we need to focus a lot more on as space is filling up faster than we were expecting.
Okay. The Klein-Dolly, the request for performance and agreement with the Columbus Pacific Development, where are we with this? I haven't really seen anything that I recall.
Yeah, so this Klein-Dolly is a 30-acre parcel the county owns next to Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. The big action that occurred this year was, we're deciding to do a public-private partnership for a multi-use development on this property that includes some housing and other new fire station and other amenities. And so the big accomplishment this year was issuing a request for proposals to find a developer to work with and negotiate a project with. Through that process, the council chose Columbus Pacific Development. So why you haven't seen anything yet is because they are in the process of finalizing the development and financial partnership agreement with them. Once that is complete, then we can start negotiating the design details for the project. So if you look at our draft work plan for 2026, it really is focused on finalizing that agreement and then working on those design details and the next steps.
Okay, and Basin Recreation is still a partner with
us. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, and the Skull Candy building, first we need to change the name.
Yes, yes. I know we're not wanting to call it that anymore internally for sure. So we actually launched a contest among our employees to submit some name suggestions. They all voted for their top three, which we will be sending out to the public in January and having and asking that the public vote for their favorite name choice for that. So I'm glad I had a chance to announce that here. We're hoping the public will engage in that process. The exciting thing about this building is our plans are to make it the landmark facility for the county in Kimball Junction. We were able to negotiate a new lease with Skull Candy for them to actually leave early, kind of end their lease early, and they have moved over to a place in Redstone. So now we have the building for 100% for county functions. We have just recently partnered with Zwick Construction, and GSBS Architects has actually been with us for the year looking at designing a new library branch, DMV office, and council dais and meeting space on the first floor. We just had our kickoff meeting yesterday with Zwick. We're really excited to start and kick off construction on that project on January 12th. We're expected it to take about 6 months, and then we'll be able to move everyone in and open it to the public. We'll likely have a really fun public engagement event in the opening of that building so that folks can see the great new facility.
Okay, I want to know about those top three names. You don't have them yet?
I do, but I don't know if I should preview them here.
Yeah, you should.
They're
absolutely
very exciting. Sure. Yeah, but that'll be coming out to the public really soon.
Are they people names?
No, they're things like that maybe were made a good acronym, like the Hub or the CERC or the Peak, that type of thing. So, we're excited to see what ends up happening there.
Okay, we are running out of time, and I know I do want to talk more about the legislature coming up, but maybe we can bring you back for that conversation. But real quick, the Utah legislative session opens Tuesday, the 20th of January, running through Friday, March 6th. I guess if you were to hit just the highlights that you're hearing right now, can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, what we're hearing will be the major focus of this legislation is affordability and cost of living here in Utah. I think everyone is concerned about how expensive housing is right now, how expensive our bills are, even just eating out is very expensive. And so the legislature is likely to offer a lot of bills around that. One in particular that will impact us is they're discussing potentially increasing the residential property tax exemption. As you know, full-time residents pay less in their property taxes than part-time residents. Unfortunately, what that will do, while it helps residents, it's going to shift the tax burden then to the commercial sector, because the way it works in Utah is taxing entities like the county is guaranteed to collect the same amount in property tax revenue every year, regardless of inflation or recession, unless unless there's new growth or we go through the truth and taxation process. So it'll be interesting to see how that shapes out and where they end up moving that exemption to. There's also bills around gas prices. There's conversations with Rocky Mountain Power on how to make that more affordable. Housing. One thing we're really excited about is we've been working with a couple of legislators on increasing a tax credit for businesses who either create childcare facilities or contract with providers to help provide childcare to their employees. That also feeds into the affordability conversation. We also are expected to see additional changes for elections and precinct maps and filing deadlines. There's already a lot of interesting things that are at play that our clerk is having to respond to now regarding filing deadlines. We also are expecting ongoing fights with the judiciary around the state's power in general. As you know, there were a couple of issues this past year around districting and the referenda process. We're also expecting several bills looking at county classifications and form of government. The other big thing that we're really nervous about is the Beehive Development Agency is likely to return in some pared-down fashion, again, in the affordability discussion as well. This is the bill that essentially gives state preemption over local land use authority and development decisions, which a lot of people fought against last session, and it didn't end up moving anywhere. So we'll have to see. You know, we've heard statements from the governor even as recent as October about wanting to get a little bit more aggressive on this issue. So again, he has this goal of creating something like 35,000 starter homes or something across the state. So we'll have to see how those shape out.
Okay. Jana, I appreciate your time this morning. Thanks. And we'll bring you back before the legislative session starts. You probably know a lot more about that.
Yes. Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. That's Jana Young, Deputy County Manager. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we reported, the Summit County Council closed on the $25 million, 835-acre Your Ranch at the entrance to Camas last week with the conservation easement. And on the phone to tell us more is one of those who ran the ranch for decades, former Summit County Council member and state legislature for Summit County, David Yor. Good morning, Dave. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you and your family have been working the land for decades. It's been in the Your Family Ranch, I read, since 1892. Used as both a dairy and a cattle ranch?
That is correct. We were dairy ever since I was born, and then about 20 years ago, we sold the dairy in 2013, and we went full-time into the beef production.
Okay. So when did you stop farming the land? Are still happening?
About five years after I was born, which was in 1951. So, and I was there ever since, except for 2 years, of which I served for the church over in England. But I've been on the farm ever since then.
Okay. But it sounds like the family has still got another year of ranching on it. But when did you kind of pick up and leave town?
Just about a year ago, almost a year to the day, we moved to Missouri. But my brother has been there. I've had nephews there working with it, and I don't think it's missed a beat. But it kept going, and it's still a very pretty place. As you come over the mountain and start to drop into the Camas Valley, it's still a very, very pretty place to look at.
Yeah. So besides yourself, how many others were part of the sale? You're one of a number of brothers. I know that.
Well, there were seven of us all together, and all seven were given a proportionate amount depending upon a lot of different family politics that took place over the last 20 years. We all received our proportionate share of the money.
Okay.
But Robert and I, my oldest brother, who worked with me, we will still have the farm under a lease for another year until we get everything cleaned up to where we can exit and turn it over to the county and let them decide the future of the ranch.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you doing in Missouri then?
I'm farming. I'm ranching. I brought almost 250 head of mother beef cows with me out here to Missouri.
Oh, my goodness. So there's, you didn't want to retire? You could.
When you retire, Leslie, you die.
Okay.
And it's not that I'm not going to die. It's just that I'm not going to increase the possibility of dying by retiring. I enjoy working. I enjoy working the farm. I have a son out here, and I'm not going nearly as hard and long as I used to be, but I still do a lot of things with him, and he'll just take over out here.
Nice. Well, selling a family ranch, never an easy decision. I guess what ultimately led your family to sell the property to Summit County and not a developer?
Well, that's a good question, Leslie. One of the things that really led to us is the fact is that knowing what the county would do with it. They wouldn't be developing it. They would keep it as a farming piece of property. That was one of the agreements, that it had to be continually harvested, either with livestock or with putting up hay on it. And always making it look like it was a thriving piece of agricultural ground. Not just let it go to weeds or tall grass that it could be burned, but it had to always look viable, had to always look pretty and green, so that when people came over the mountain, they realized it was a well-polished piece of agricultural property.
Hmm. Was it difficult to get seven brothers to agree?
Yeah, it was difficult. Pretty much most of them wanted to sell because it was getting into the third and fourth generation down the road. And how do we divide it up when you're talking grandchildren and great-grandchildren? And it's much, much easier to get things under control while we were still alive in that generation, other than turn it over to our grandkids or great-grandkids. Yeah. And so it was the best thing for us to do, Leslie.
So can you describe what the your family ranch has meant to you and your family over the years?
Well, at least to my brother and I, Robert, who is the oldest, it was a way for us to raise our children. I think we were on the sixth generation of being raised on that farm. And when you work with the farm and you work with ground, I should say the ground, it becomes part of you. It's just like a school teacher that puts in 30 years or 35 years in, and you expect to walk away without having a hollow feeling. It's the same way. It becomes part of us. You remember the good years of, you know, the last little while have been good years, but in 1959 and 1960, we had very little water in the valley. And we were all through haying by about the 4th of July because there wasn't any more water. Now, luckily, Central Utah Water is taking care of a lot of that gamble. But still, when you have a cow calving in the middle of the night in December or January and it's 20 below, you've got to go help her calve. You remember those.
Yeah, so it sounds a little bit bittersweet, though, for you to have left.
Oh, it's bittersweet. I'm just glad that hopefully there will be people for 100, 150 years that will be able to appreciate the beauty of that valley. And at least on both sides of the road going into the Camas area, that will pretty well be preserved, at least on our ground. Now, I don't know what my neighbors are going to do necessarily, but at least on that ground and on the north side of the road, there will be around 280 acres that will be constantly green. It will not be housetops. Hopefully, it will be taken care of and groomed very appropriately. But that's a legacy that people will be able to see and watch and hopefully appreciate what forefathers have done for them.
Yeah. And kind of looking back, you mentioned, you know, the years of no water. Any other kind of thoughts on how agriculture in the Camas Valley had changed, you know, over your lifetime?
Well, yes. I will say growing up, as a 9-year-old boy, there was a major accident in our family in which my father was in the hospital for over a month. And all the neighbors, and I say neighbors from Peola up to Woodland, came and put up our hay with little old tractors, little old Super C International tractors that could hardly pull anything. They put up our hay, they irrigated our ground, and even helped milk our cows there for about 30 or 40 days. You don't have that neighborhood, even in agriculture, as we did then. We have, as farmers, we have become much more independent, and we do not work together nearly as much as a community as a whole. Back as a boy growing up, I remember of a neighbor breaking his leg, and the same thing happened to him. The neighbors put up his hay and helped with the family problems that were happening around there. And there's not that opportunity anymore because there's not that many people at least know how to put up hay. But we all seem to have a way of becoming very independent with bigger equipment, bigger tractors, and think that we don't need the neighbors as much. And that's one of the things that isn't nearly as strong today as it was back when I was growing up as a young boy.
Yeah. And it's interesting as you kind of talk. I mean, it sounds to me, I mean, just not knowing anything about cattle or dairy cows. I mean, it just sounds like a dairy cow operation is much more involved than a cattle ranch, huh?
Oh, it's like I have told people many times, ever since I sold the dairy herd, I've been on vacation. Dairying is 24/7, 365. I never spent a Sunday or a Christmas or a New Year's without going to the barn and milking cows at least once or twice that day until I sold them. And now on Sundays or on Christmas or New Year's, whatever it might be, I do whatever I want to do. I'm not being forced to go take care of 200 or 300 head of dairy cows and milk them 2 or 3 times a day. So yeah, I'm still on vacation.
Well, good. Yeah, you deserve it. And I guess as somebody who has, you know, served both on the Summit County Council as well as the Utah State Legislature, I guess how did that experience in public office shape how you move forward with this decision, again, to sell to, you know, and keep the land preserved as open space as opposed to, right, a private developer where we could see just rows and rows of roofs?
Well, I do remember very, very vividly in about 1994 sitting on the House floor and talking about, there was a debate going on about open space and about parks and things like that. And I remember in committee meeting just prior to that, I heard a person who had just migrated from New York into Utah, and they came to testify of the importance of open space. How back in New York and some of the slum areas, all they had was asphalt and cement. And I remember that person saying, you don't know what it means to a person in Chicago or New York to take a handful of black dirt and hold it in their hands and be able to watch the grass grow around in the parks. And they said specifically, do you wonder why people in the high towers and the high multi-housing areas have pigeons? It's the thing closest to nature they're going to get. And then it started to resonate within myself how much my ranch, how much my ground meant to me to be able to grab the green, the dirt and the sod and feel it in my hands and watch things grow, watch the grass grow, watch my cattle grow. And I believe that green is a very, very important part in establishing a mentally stable citizenship. You just have to have something that you can watch grow. Asphalt and cement, they're good in their place, but people have to get out and experience something that they can't experience in their house or they can't experience on the basketball court or wherever else it is. Green I would classify as Mother Nature. And I classify Mother Nature the same as Godhood.
Tell me how you like Missouri.
Greatly different.
Yeah, I'm going to say the humidity treating you right?
If I had it all over, do over again, I wouldn't bring cows from Utah to Missouri. I would buy the cows here. The humidity and the heat has been very, very hard on the animals. This is probably the hottest summer we just came through in probably a couple of decades of what all the neighbors have said. But the cows are now getting back on their feet. They're now gaining weight again, and they're still starting to look. But it's a totally different environment. The grass is totally different. The grass in Utah is much more powerful than the grass in Missouri because the grass here grows so fast. But I still believe that I can raise a pound of beef cheaper in Missouri than I can in Utah because I don't have to feed all for 150 days and I don't have to truck all across the state of Utah. And so I still believe that my plan and my thoughts or my the goals that we had are going to come to fruition if we have a normal summer out here or a normal year, which I'm not sure we all know, any of us know what normal is anymore with the weather the way it is.
Yeah, it's bleak out here as we speak, but hopefully some more snow on the weekend. Well, Dave, anything hopefully. Else you'd like to say to our listeners about the sale of the Ure Ranch, which hopefully it's always known as?
Well, as you've said many times, it's a mixed bag. But one thing I would like to say, Leslie, I started doing interviews and started listening to your radio station back in 1988 when I first ran for county commissioner. And I have learned very, very, very much from your audience in reaching out to me, whether as a county commissioner or whether as a legislature or even when I was the director of schools, institutional trust lands. I've learned a lot and I've appreciated, even though some of them were pretty mean when they got a hold of me, but I learned from their position what their thoughts were. We don't all have the same thoughts because we have come from different backgrounds, different educations, different religions, whatever it might be. But that doesn't mean that their thoughts or my thoughts are any more important than anyone else's. It just means we have to live together in the same community. We have to treat each other civilly and respectfully. And then we meet at a certain point to where we can share ideas and good things will come out of that. If we'll just take the time to sit and listen and to give respect to other people who have as strong an opinion of how life should be as I do. So that's what I've learned. The farm kept me grounded, I will tell you that. By coming home every day, every night from the legislature, and quite often I would come home and take care of animals, it kept me grounded as to what I was really needed to do in the legislature. So anyway, I would say thank you to your listening audience. I doubt that I will have another interview on your radio station again, but I wish everybody a very happy holiday. And tell him thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to serve.
Dave, again, thank you for all the service you gave to Summit County. And again, like I say, the lasting legacy of the open space that we'll all get to enjoy and pay for. But, you know, I want to say our audience, our listeners, are some of the smartest people I know. So I understand where you're coming from in terms of what you learned from them. So thanks to our listeners, and also a big thank you to you. Again, you've always been available for interviews, and I've always enjoyed talking to you, so thank you.
Leslie, thank you to you and your audience, and have a very, very happy holiday.
You too. That's former Summit County resident Dave Ure, also the former owner of the Ure Ranch, or one of the owners. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, there are lots of art and cultural activities happening this holiday season, and in the studio with details, I have Park City Summit County Arts Council Marketing Manager Kendall Kelly, along with Community Inclusion and Engagement Coordinator Andrea Zavala. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Since we last talked, Arts Council hosted the opening of the Create PC Holiday Makers Market, and it's been open since. So maybe just tell us what it is and what people will find and where you're located and the hours.
Great, thanks so much. Yes, we have actually, we launched in November, and since then we've sold so many things. It's been fantastic for all the local makers. Create PC, the holiday makers market specifically, is for makers and artists. So it's a little bit different than our year-round offerings at that location. It is at 1500 Kearns Boulevard behind Tupelo and Wells Fargo. So you can see all the colorful decorations and lots of ornaments and cool window display. But inside what you will find is you're going to find creative goods, artwork. There's books, cards, chocolate, ornaments. Really what I feel like when you come in to Create PC is that it could be that you're looking for something specific, but you're going to find something that you didn't expect. There's little items that call to everyone in there, and it could be from a print to an original artwork. It could be a wood cutting board or jewelry. It could be ceramics. It could be food. There's a new restock of chunky cookies that the gal does every week. So those are fresh, and she has some new flavors for this week. And what's fantastic is that this week in particular, we have extra hours. So we have our staff members are in for today as well as tomorrow. So we're going to be open until 5 p.m. tomorrow evening so that you're able to really shop until the very last minute before we're closed on Christmas Day. And then after that, we will continue to be open. So we'll be open through the weekend. And actually, the market runs until February. So even though this is a very holiday, you know, specific time, and it's great time to get gifts, it's something that you'll be able to get Park City souvenirs and continue shopping there until the end of the end of January.
Okay, so today and tomorrow open till 5 p.m.
Yes, today will be open till 6.
Okay, got it. Let me see, and then also you take a little bit of profit from the maker, which helps support your work.
Yes, typically in a gallery or in a space where someone is selling their goods and they're not there to have to sell it, like a market. If they do a pop-up market, that's something they're putting a lot of time and effort into being there. And in this situation, they get to give us their products and we do all the work for them. We hold the space, we have the staff, we do all of the accounting side of things. So what we do is we have an 85% of the proceeds go to the artists and 15% comes back to the Arts Council. And this is to help support our mission of supporting artists, keeping spaces like this going. In addition to the profit share that we're able to, you know, make some money off of, we also have an opportunity drawing happening at the space during this holiday time period. So now until the end of the year, if you come in and shop at Create PC, you'll also have a chance to buy a opportunity drawing ticket for $750 worth of value for Park City dining and retail. So it's a really great way to support the Arts Council, also win an opportunity to have some really cool dining and shopping experiences with the Park City Mountain Resort.
Okay. A lot of family programming happening at the Park City Library during the holiday break. And Andrea, you're on the library board, so tell us what's going on.
The library is keeping us really entertained. There are lots of family programming happening, including the Park City Film Winter Break film screenings. We watched The Elf yesterday, and then we walked to Main Street and had some ice cream at Jawakao. We have Craft Afternoon on Saturdays to go, as well as the Park City Artists Association art exhibit. There is also a winter break DIY. We're gonna set up tables outside with art supplies, and people can just get creative and do some things. And that's it.
Okay. So that's happening. Basically, something going on every day.
Every day. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They also have a K-pop, forgot about that one, craft on the 29th. Mm-hmm.
The activations for the library is extensive, and it's something that we share on our website, they have on their website. So I just think it's a really cool opportunity to be able to say there's going to be something happening every day.
And this is just an addition on what they have all their programming year round.
Great. Okay. Let's see. Some other events that people might be interested. We still got the gondola stroll happening at the Canyons Village and the snow globe stroll.
Yes, and it's fun because both of those entities, they have different artists that they choose, and sometimes there's a little overlap. An artist or two will have a similar piece at the two locations. However, this year I was looking, there's seven artists here on Main Street, and I believe there's around six or seven in the gondolas as well over at Canyons Village. And it's just so cool, the active like experience with it, getting to see the little mysterious items that are hidden in it, getting to go and see each of the different displays. It really is such a fun experience to walk up and down Main Street and have a mission to go see all of those. I saw some folks down at the bottom of Main Street and they said, how many are there? We're going to go see every single one. That was their goal. And I think it's a really, the music that plays, the spinning different experiences. There was one I saw that has, it goes into different displays of an ice skater, skiers, carolers, and I just, the creativity that people put into these different displays is fantastic.
Okay. Also want to note that Friday is the last Friday of the month, and so we have the monthly gallery stroll. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so similar to what we do every year, but this year it's going to be during the holidays, and you know, people are going to be out and about looking for some fun things to do, and so this particular gallery stroll will take place on Friday evening, as usual, and you're going to be able to stop into all the galleries that will have their just artwork open and available for everyone to come check out later into the evening, whereas typically your galleries close on the earlier side, so this particular week you'll be able to go in and just be able to peruse all the different galleries, including Create PC.
Okay, and then there's also some New Year's Eve celebrations for families. Tell us about these.
Yes, so this is another thing that both the Kimball Art Center and Park City Library, this will be taking place next week, but New Year's Eve is a great way for children to be able to participate in the New Year's Eve festivities, and it's something that takes place earlier in the day. So a lot of craft and activity and involvement, being able to spend their New Year's Eve having a good time, just as similar to the adults who might be going out later in the evening for their New Year's Eve celebrations.
Okay.
Both Kimball Art Center and Park City Library are having their own separate New Year's Eve celebrations.
Okay, so December 31st at noon at either the Kimball or at the library.
Correct.
Okay, yes. Anything else going on you want to mention?
You know, I just think that it's really great to know that throughout the whole town, there's a lot of different entities that are doing so. There's going to be glass blowing experience at Old Town Cellars tomorrow night. There's going to be different restaurants who are having holiday dinners, and there's just so many things that you can come and experience in town, and I think that it's something you might have to look a little bit more for because it's not your usual. But at the same time, if you go to the Visit Park City Chamber's website, if you go to the Arts Council's website, there's these event calendars that blow your mind as to all the different offerings that you could be able to experience and that you just have to search a little bit differently for. And I think you should take the time to do it because you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Kendall Kelly and Andrea Zavala, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, Utah has added another state park to its growing list of official international dark sky destinations. There are 250 dark sky designated locations across the globe and more than 30 right here in the state of Utah. That now includes the most recently added Snow Canyon State Park. The park outside St. George was named an urban night sky place for its dark sky friend lighting, educational programs, and accessibility to the night sky. Snow Canyon Park staff have worked for years to reach the designation to benefit visitors and to improve nocturnal ecosystems by modifying existing lights to achieve 100% dark sky friendly compliance.